Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
And the free spirit tends to be, not always, but the free spirit tends to be the spender.
Jade Warshaw on Focus on the Family Minute.
And the nerd tends to be the person who's like, I save, I like to put away for a rainy day. And those two people get married. And then it's like, everything's breaking loose.
And the Lord chuckles.
That's right. I'm sure he does. But the truth is, I think if you can lean into that and go, okay, I know who I am. I know who you are. But it's not an excuse to tune out. You know, just because the free spirit is not really a numbers person, you don't tune out. You still come together at the table. And the numbers person says, hey, I started filling in some of these numbers. How do you feel about it? Then the free spirit gets to go, oh, that's all I get for groceries? Like, I need a little bit more, right? And so you're still having this open dialogue. Both spouses are able to really say, well, this is what I need. And here's where I need to be reflected in the budget.
More at familyminute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Frankel family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Wesley here from Stove and Spa Center. I just wanted to thank you for letting us make your life more comfortable for 35 years. You can see and explore all of our hearth products, wood, gas, pellet, and electric, to keep you warm and cozy during cold and wet winters. Or maybe you're looking to enjoy the benefits of what hot tub's soothing water can do for your body and to melt away the stress that living today brings on. Or perhaps you want to get in better shape this year by exercising in one of our swim spas. There are many models and sizes. We even have models with treadmills built into them. We have a large showroom with lots of the products we sell. Plus, lead times to get products have been greatly reduced. And of course, you can still get all the supplies and even get your water tested for your pool and spa. Open Tuesday through Saturday. Come check us out at Stove and Spa Center, 7485 El Camino Real at Tascadero, between Curberel and Moore Roads. All products we offer are on our website at stoveandspa.com.
Hi, this is Chris from We Help You Legal. Legal documents should be simple and affordable. At We Help You Legal, there are no lawyers and no high costs. Just certified experts to assist you with living trusts, wills, divorce matters, corporations, and LLCs.
Hi, I'm Christina. We also offer notary services. You can find us online at wehelpyoulegal.com or call 805-237-7770.
We Help You Legal, your Central Coast legal document company.
Good afternoon and welcome to Free Talk California with Susanna Luthi on AM 1230 KPRL 99.3 FM. Phone lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. California Free Talk is brought to you by A-Town Diner in Atascadero on El Camino Real. Now open for dinner every night. Ask about the daily specials. And now, Free Talk California on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to Free Talk California. I'm Susanna Luthi. Later this hour, I will be joined by a repeat guest, Lance Christensen from the California Policy Center. We will be discussing what he expects, what we all might expect from this year and California's posture of quote-unquote resistance against the incoming Donald Trump administration. We will discuss all that and more after our first break. But first, I just want to say Happy New Year. Today is quite a day. Every day kind of feels historic in these recent weeks. But today, Justin Trudeau of Canada, who implemented one of the most outrageous COVID era crackdown that has continued in Canada, our neighbor, he resigned amid just plummeting numbers as the country faces insane housing prices. We think ours are crazy, but Canada's really suffered thanks to a massive migrant what am I trying to say? Massive migrant influx, similar to other Western countries, ours included. And he has kind of been defiant in the face of many calls for a new election. The conservative leader, Pierre Poilievre, I believe is how we say his name, he has made himself a star with his very eloquent and easy defenses of rolling back the scale of the federal government and opposing Trudeau's progressive social policies. So the election will be happening there, and Donald Trump met the news with an invitation for Canada to become the 51st state. It was pretty funny. Let me see if I can find that. But meanwhile, Kamala Harris certified her own loss as Donald Trump became the officially certified winner of the 2024 election. He will take office later this month. And Keir Starmer, who is the UK's Labour, which is the Liberal Party in the UK. He is their prime minister, belongs to the Labour Party. He has really been criticized heavily since he took office over the summer. It's kind of been shocking to watch. He oversaw the imprisonment of many Britons, including old people and young people, for social media posts after riots over the stabbing murders of three little girls, which turned out to be by the son of migrants who was also Muslim, when the riots broke out with protesters saying that this was due to Islamicism. They were quelled very swiftly, and they were accused of racism and bigotry, and so many were imprisoned. And then it turned out to be that the murderer was in fact Muslim, that had been kept under wraps, and leaders had actually said that he was not. So that kind of started Keir Starmer's reign in Britain. It has gone on. He has put tens of billions of dollars toward very costly green energy, including wind, while at the same time imposing an inheritance tax on family farms, which has led to mass protests by farmers and a lot of despair from farmers who say that they won't be able to farm anymore. He also cut the winter fuel allowance for old people, some of whom are expected to freeze in Britain this winter, as energy costs under the whole renewable energy scheme have just skyrocketed. So that's Keir Starmer. And today he was forced, after just days of tweets from Elon Musk, he was forced to defend himself. So basically, Elon Musk went through court records and discovered a long, long, long simmering scandal, which has been really kept, the scale of it has been kept under wraps, of decades of mass grooming and raping of young girls by largely Pakistani Muslim men who immigrated to industrial towns around Britain. This is a shocking story, and I didn't mean to start off the year with such a sober story, but it's just, I can't look away from it. It's really heartrending, and it's really a scandal of epic proportions. I don't think I have seen anything like it in my lifetime, because it just throws on its head all the narratives that leaders have been putting forward about how multiculturalism is a good in and of itself, and anyone who questions it is bigoted and Islamophobic in this case. So this is a story. I'm going to read a kind of a takedown by a writer named Dominic Green. He wrote this in the Free Press. It came out over the weekend, I believe, possibly today. And I think it really sets the scene for those of us who don't live in the UK for what is at stake in this story. So I'm going to read from him again. This is Dominic Green in the Free Press, writing from London. He writes, "The grooming and serial rape of thousands of English girls by men of mostly Pakistani Muslim background over several decades is the biggest peacetime crime in the history of modern Europe. It went on for many years. It is still going on. There has been no justice for the vast majority of the victims. British governments, both conservative and Labour, hoped that they had buried the story after a few symbolic prosecutions in the 2010s. And it looked like they had succeeded until Elon Musk read some of the court papers and tweeted his disgust and bafflement on X over the new year. Britain now stands shamed before the world. The public suppressed wrath is bubbling to the surface in petitions, calls for a public inquiry, and demands for accountability. The scandal is already reshaping British politics. It's not just about the heinous nature of the crimes, it's that every level of the British system is implicated in the cover-up. Social workers were intimidated into silence. Local police ignored, excused, and even abetted pedophile rapists across dozens of cities. Senior police and home office officials deliberately avoided action in the name of maintaining what they called community relations. Local councillors and members, members of parliament rejected pleas for help from the parents of raped children. Charities, NGOs, and Labour MPs accused those who discussed the scandal of racism and Islamophobia. The media mostly ignored or downplayed the biggest story of their lifetimes. Zealous in their incuriosity, much of Britain's elite media elite remained barnacled to the bubble of Westminster politics and its self-serving priorities. They did this to defend a failed model of multiculturalism and to avoid asking hard questions about the failures of immigration policy and assimilation. They did this because they were afraid of being called racist or Islamophobic. They did this because Britain's traditional class snobbery had fused with the new snobbery of political correctness. All of which is why no one knows precisely how many thousands of young girls were raped in how many towns across Britain since the 1970s. What we do know is that the epicenter was the post-industrial mill towns of England's North and Midlands, where immigrants from Pakistan and Bangladesh settled in the 1960s. White locals say the grooming and rapes began soon after. In Rotherham, the rundown Yorkshire city where the scandal first broke, local police and councillors were notified about systemic grooming and sex abuse by 2001. The first convictions did not occur until 2010, when five men of Pakistani background were jailed for multiple offenses against girls as young as 12 years of age. These men targeted the most vulnerable girls, the poor and the fatherless, children in care homes, with candy, food, taxi rides, and drugs. They raped the girls, passed them around family and friendship networks, pimped them into similar networks in other cities, then discarded them as they reached the age of consent. This pattern was repeated in as many as 50 cities across the country, including in leafy Oxford and liberal Bristol. A 2014 inquiry estimated that 1,400 girls had been serially raped in Rotherham alone, and that seems to be a conservative estimate. The details are established beyond doubt in the small number of prosecutions that eventually made it to court. The suffering described in the court papers is sickening to read. The girls were drugged, beaten, sodomized, gang raped, trafficked, and tortured. I'm not going to read some of the examples. I read some of the court documents, and they were shattering. The author does go through some of the specifics. Again, if you want to read it, the story is on the Free Press. Dominic Green goes on to say, "In the name of say her name, no one important thought it was worth saying the names of these girls. The girls, their rapists told them, were white slags, worthless and expendable. Apart from a few whistleblowers, most of them women, and courageous journalists such as Julie Bindle, Andrew Norfolk, Douglas Murray, and Charlie Peters, the media showed no interest. Why? Because this was the wrong kind of racially motivated crime committed by the wrong kind of criminal. The majority of the victims were white, plus some Sikhs. The majority of their abusers were Pakistani and Bangladeshi Muslim extraction. The majority of their crimes were committed in cities with a Labour Party-controlled council and a Labour Party MP who needed Muslim votes. This led to institutional racism of the inverted kind, and that enabled the perpetrators to do as they liked. The system itself became corrupted. Welfare workers admit that they failed to report crimes because the police told them they would be accused as racist. The leader of one rape gang in Oldham, Shabir Ahmed, worked for the local council as a welfare rights officer and ran his gang from the council welfare office. Another member was on the Oldham Youth Council. In multiple cases, local labor politicians of Pakistani background interfered with police inquiries. In Telford in 2016, 10 members of the Labor Council wrote to the Home Secretary, the Conservatives and Amber Rudd, claiming that allegations of abuse were sensationalized and that there was no need for action. 2 years later, an investigation by the Sunday Mirror newspaper counted some 1,000 victims. The superintendent of the West Mercia Regional Police significantly disputed the figures and said that the Mirror had sensationalized the issue. And the police were in no hurry to inquire themselves. Senior police repeatedly denied there was a problem, then denied its obvious racial and religious elements. Government and police agree that regardless of which party is in power, the peace and the multicultural mass migration Britain depends on community relations. The law-abiding public's alarm about the consequences of mass immigration is suppressed, stigmatized by the political class and the press as the racism of the chimerical, quote-unquote, far right. For the Labour Party specifically, community relations means cultivating urban Muslim voters. Nazir Afzal, who was the chief crown prosecutor for northwestern England between 2011 and 2015, claims that in 2008, the Home Office advised police not to prosecute grooming gang cases because the girls had made an informed choice about their sexual behavior. In late December 2024, so just a few weeks ago, Jess Phillips, the Home Office's Minister for Safeguarding and Violence Against Women and Girls, refused requests from the Oldham City Council for a government-led inquiry into the institutional failure and corruption that had made the Oldham cases possible. The only thing Phillips is safeguarding is her seat. The Conservatives were not much better. In 2019, shortly before he became Conservative leader and Prime Minister, Boris Johnson complained that money spent on investigating historic child abuse crimes was money spaffed up a wall. Spaffing is a crude English slang term. In 2020, Johnson's Home Office suppressed Conservatives' own research on grooming gangs. Releasing it, they said, was not in the national interest. So the story goes on, but you get the idea. It's really a horrific story. And what's been interesting in the, over the last week or so is Elon Musk just will not let it go. And if you look up, if you look on the internet rather than the social media platform where he is talking about it, after, as I said, looking up the court reports and transcripts, which are so graphic and shocking, all the headlines are quoting the labor politicians, including the Prime Minister Keir Starmer, as refuting the quote unquote lies and far right lies being aimed their way for suppressing the scope of the scandal. So interestingly, Keir Starmer was a crown prosecutor, so the nation's chief prosecutor, at a critical time in this juncture. And Musk has been targeting him, saying that an inquiry would shame him and bring to light how he helped cover it up. Starmer, when he was forced to take a stand before cameras today and respond to press queries, and did not name Musk, he claimed that he had taken strong action as the chief prosecutor, and he also shoved a lot of blame on the so-called far right, kind of suggesting that anyone who wants more inquiry into this, who wants more investigation into potential cover up and abetting by government officials, is part of the far right, which, as all you listeners know, is a term that has become so widely used, and it's basically a way of discrediting any question or challenge. And he basically said that anyone who joins calls for this inquiry, we're also looking to benefit themselves politically, and we're just doing it to jump on the bandwagon of seeking accountability. And he was very swift to defend his minister, Jess Phillips, the one who shut down the request from the Oldham Town Council for a national inquiry. So he's in the hot seat, and for a few tweets, I don't know if this was Friday or Saturday, but Musk, it looked like he was potentially going to bring down the British government. He was calling King Charles to dissolve Parliament. He's been calling for Starmer to resign. Starmer's poll numbers, as I said, he's had a really rough start to his premiership, and his poll numbers are very low. No one was really expecting him to say much in this press conference today, and I think that played out, doing a lot of shoving, trying to shrug off responsibility, to point the finger elsewhere. And Keir Starmer has also said that he's been swift to accuse Britons of Islamophobia, which means fear of Islam, and saying, oh, women who wear the hijab are getting nervous to go on public transport, and Britons are being so racist and bigoted towards them. So he's really doubled down on defending the new culture that has been kind of imposed on the British population. And there are it's interesting, because I believe it was a few years ago, one of the Emirates' top people said that extremism was going to be coming out of Europe, and because of the mass migration and the infusion of a massive Muslim population into the West. So we may be seeing that play out. Anyway, stay with us through this next break, and we will be back speaking with Lance Christensen. Stay tuned.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care. All your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. Congress certifying President-elect Trump as the 2024 election winner without a challenge. His opponent, Vice President Kamala Harris, reading the results as part of her role as Senate President.
Donald J. Trump of the state of Florida has received 312 votes.
The certification comes in contrast to the Capitol riot on January 6, 4 years ago. Millions of Americans getting a wintry wallop of snow and ice from cities from Washington to Philadelphia. They're getting hard hit by an icy blast. Earlier, several states in the nation's midsection were buried.
Several states across the United States are going through the first big snowstorm of the year. It brought on blizzard conditions to Kansas, dropping the biggest snow in years across the Midwest and raining crippling ice across Missouri and the Ohio Valley.
Fox Weather's Brandi Campbell. America is listening to Fox News.
MPM Incorporated Property Management is your hometown property management company serving the North County. MPM manages everything from single-family residential homes to large apartment complexes. MPM strives to be the most responsive management company with licensed agents and contractors on staff always available to help. They love houses and love helping homeowners reach their investment goals. Go to PassoPM.com or call 237-9730 and ask for Jason.
Welcome back to Free Talk California. I'm Susanna Luthi, and I think Lance is on the other line. Are you with us, Lance? Not yet. So we're having a little technical trouble. But anyway, we will be talking about the year ahead with California. Governor Newsom actually previewed his first draft of the budget today. He is proposing a $322 billion state spending plan. This is a big budget. That has been kind of the modus operandi for Governor Newsom. And he is acknowledging that there may be spending unknowns because the Trump administration is coming in, and he and Donald Trump has threatened federal funding if California doesn't follow federal rules. So we will see about that. Our state budget watchdog a few weeks ago in December warned that even though the budget is in fair shape for the time being, they're predicting massive deficits over the next few years. Let's see. Sorry about that. We are still trying to get through to Lance. The other California news, which came out late, is the fact that homelessness increased again. And it was interesting because Governor Newsom did say that because homelessness increased by a smaller amount than the rest of the country, 3% compared to 14%, California is now a model for homelessness. Anyway, it does seem that Lance is connected to us. Welcome. Are you on air? Lance? We are still not connected. So anyway, I'm not quite sure what's going on. Sorry about that. Anyway, let's see. Technology. Anyway, let's see what else we can talk about. One of our annual traditions is that U-Haul always comes out with a report of which states had the most people moving out and which state had the most people moving in. California is usually at the top of the list for people moving out, and that was the case once again for the fifth year in a row. California has finished at the top of the U-Haul's growth index, meaning that more Californians rented one-way U-Haul trucks to leave the state last year than residents of any other state. This happened even as the state has reported a hiatus in our population loss, but that is mostly attributed to international migration. And the Census Bureau, which came out with that report, has not broken that out, illegal migration versus legal. So it's unclear whether that's all attributed to the border policies, which will be hopefully ramped back pretty quickly. I'm sorry, I keep getting messages of attempts to connect. I'm going to have Lance call the main number. One second. It is difficult to talk and text for this at the same time. Let's see. So, well, we... I'm going to try one more time. Lance, are you with us?
I think I'm on.
We are on. Perfect. Because, hallelujah, I was filibustering.
My so, apologies. Anyway, I don't know what happened. Technology somehow got screwed up.
It was probably our fault. But thank you. Thank you for hanging in there. So, anyway, welcome back to the show. It's been a while, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, too.
So, we started out, I just mentioned today was a budget preview day, and Newsom announced his proposed $322 billion state spending plan. This is a big budget, and it's interesting since it's coming right on the heels of massive deficits. Any thoughts? Were you watching the budget presentation at all? Do you have any thoughts about this plan?
Yeah, I didn't watch the budget presentation today, but I have been following all the buildup to it, and I did work at the Department of Finance for a period of time years ago, so I know how this works. They spend the whole fall trying to put this budget together, trying to ascertain what the costs of the legislative, you know, bills that came through, the different programs, expansions and contractions, and also thinking about what happens in D.C. And because Trump's about to come in office, I think they panicked, and I think they had to figure out how to work around a whole bunch of federal restrictions and mandates that are not going to be favorable to Gavin Newsom's very progressive budget. And they're going to put something out there that probably doesn't reflect what will eventually pass in the legislature in June when it's supposed to be finally reviewed and passed by the legislature.
Right. That leads into my next question, which is we're poised once again. Both Gavin Newsom and our Attorney General Rob Bonta have positioned themselves to lead the quote unquote resistance against the Trump administration. Take two. What's the feeling in Sacramento? Out here there's and just kind of generally in across kind of all social media feeds, that seems to be kind of an exhausted trope, the whole resistance mantra. But what's the sense in Sacramento?
I think if you look at what's happening in terms of leadership and committee assignments, there's some amount of Democrats thinking that they can keep funding the Trump administration. But if anybody watched the certification of the president today, I think Washington, D.C. has resigned itself to the fact that it has 4 years of Trump. And so if they're going to fight against the federal government, they're going to lose. And you see what happened over the last several weeks as Gavin Newsom sprinted out to D.C. a time or two. He's going to be out this week, I guess, as well for the funeral of President Carter. He's begging and pleading for all sorts of exemptions, which may or may not continue on beyond, you know, the next few weeks. And so I think that those that watched the election results carefully saw that 10 counties moved to the right, places like Imperial County, which is a very deep immigrant and Democratic stronghold, is on the verge of becoming a Republican county. When you watch what's happening in terms of the three legislators that came in blue districts and what could happen in the future, they've got to be a little panicked and concerned because housing prices still are high, costs of electricity and gas are still high, public safety, though we passed Prop 36, is still not a done deal. They're going to have to work really hard on fixing our schools and education and making sure that taxes aren't too high. So we'll see what happens in the coming weeks as they introduce our legislation.
What are you expecting? Are you expecting more taxes? Do you think that with Newsom as the lame duck, that the more progressive legislature is going to push on that?
Well, we have upwards of two dozen new legislators that have never voted for anything substantial in their life. And when they get into office, they're going to be posed with the fact that we have multi-year deficits. So we have a big budget, but there's no way that they can actually spend the money they don't have. And so they're going to have to talk about cuts in public school education as the schools continue to decrease in average daily attendance. They're going to have to talk about housing and what all has not been done over the last several years to reduce those costs. The regulatory burdens on businesses is still pretty tremendous and is driving businesses out of the state. And insurance costs in places like where I live, which is in Northern California, You've got people that can't rebuild their homes out of, after fires because insurance industries or insurance companies have simply just picked up and left California. If that continues on, it will be very difficult to attract or keep any sort of businesses in the state.
Do you think there is enough pressure, financial pressure, or constituent pressure to finally address some of these things, particularly regulation? Because every year with the thousands of bills that are introduced, not one of them seems interested in taking any regulations away, unless it's making abortion or sex change procedures easier.
Right. Stripping away parental rights, right?
Right. But that never seems to come up on the state level, even though most of the burden is from the state.
I think part of the challenge is nobody has really been doggedly watching what is happening in the legislature. You have a lot of people that commentate on either side that continue to elect people, but there's not a place that the common voter can go and understand what's happening in the legislature and how their assemblymen or their senators actually voting. And so I'm working on a project to really fix that, to make sure that we can actually hold these people accountable and then build a coalition of thoughtful, disciplined voices out there to push back and make sure that we have legislators that aren't passing bills in the dark of night or gutting and amending them at the last moment that really reflect the needs of California families and businesses.
So I do want to get back to that new project, but I think in the Trump administration, we have something interesting in terms of California. Some of the biggest names are based in California. We have RFK Jr., who's very much part of the healthy food and agriculture movement at a time when agriculture has been under extreme attack. And regulated, especially small agriculture. The larger farms have been okay, but small, surely mostly because of their size, not because they have it necessarily easier. But profits are obviously easier when there's size when you have a large operation. And then we have Nicole Shanahan, who's on the outside. She was RFK's running mate, obviously, but food and farming is her passion. She is based in Silicon Valley. We have Harmeet Dhillon, who has been on this show. She is obviously she's been a champion for civil rights for Californians in the face of COVID. And she has defended so many parents in their battles with school districts. She's going to be in a big position at DOJ. So we have some serious California representation and influence. Obviously, Nicole Shanahan is out on the outside. But how do you think that's going to shape California's response, or even the ability for state leaders to set the narrative over what California taxpayer money should be used for, in terms of fighting the Trump administration rather than kind of solving our own problems?
Well, it's interesting because when Trump was in office, the first time he had really strong alliances with Kevin McCarthy, with Devin Nunes, who took over his Truth Social media empire. You've got a number of really strong advisors from California. You have a California base. But you also have all the Californians that were terrible that are leaving. Kamala Harris, you know, Javier Becerra, Mayorkas, Janet Yellen. These people have destroyed the United States or the protections that we had, and it's going to take some time to build them up. So I think President Trump's going to have a lot of really effective voices from California, the ones that you named, but also think about Elon Musk. I don't know whether he calls him a Californian anymore or Texan or you know what he.
I think he calls himself a Texan now.
but he brought in a lot of the voices from like David Sachs and others.
I didn't even mention all the Silicon Valley bros who are going.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a lot of those guys who have realized that we're on the wrong track. We got to do something dramatic, and free speech is on the table. But also, the whole Doge project is going to be an amazing experience in trying to really figured out what the federal government should do and then what the state should do. In California, if they were smart, I wrote a piece about this. I'm waiting for it to get published in Cal Matters, but I really believe that Democrats should really think seriously and hard about a new federalist movement, getting as many projects, programs, expenditures to the state level, as opposed to fighting with some D.C. bureaucrat that's going to give them pennies on the dollar. If they were smart, they would do that. And I don't know why they would fight against it, but we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, with that, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back. And I want to hear about your new project and just some thoughts on what you're looking at ahead in terms of legislation and policy. So we'll be right back. Stay with us. We are speaking with Lance Christensen from the California Policy Center, and you're listening to Free Talk California.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Lauren Simonetti, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The Dow losing steam in the final hour of trading, with the major averages finishing mixed. Tech stocks were the biggest winners today, boosting the tech-heavy NASDAQ. Chip stocks advanced following a record revenue and strong sales forecast from NVIDIA server partner Foxconn. Shares of NVIDIA climbed over 3% for a record close. Bitcoin pushing above $102,000 for the first time in a couple of weeks. Investors are optimistic about the cryptocurrency's future amid political and regulatory shifts. Shares of Fubo TV surging 249% after the company announced that it would be merging its sports streaming service with Disney's Hulu Plus live TV service. The Dow winners, NVIDIA, Microsoft, and Amazon. The Dow decliners, Amgen, Procter & Gamble, and Honeywell. The Dow falling 26 points, the NASDAQ up 243, S&P 500 up 33. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Why pay more for prescriptions? Stop overpaying and start saving with SingleCare. It's easy. Find your prescription on singlecare.com, show the coupon at the pharmacy, and start saving. SingleCare works at pharmacies nationwide and is completely free to use, whether you have insurance or not. So the next time you fill a prescription, check SingleCare to make sure you're getting the best price. Take control of your prescription costs. Go to singlecare.com or download the free app today.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
When it comes to solar energy, Central Coast residents trust Solarponics. Marilyn from Atascadero says, quote, Solarponics installed our solar system almost 20 years ago. The installation team was amazing. There are occasions when your system needs to be serviced. The Solarponics service teams are just as amazing. Thank you, Marilyn, for your Google review. When we install a sustainable energy system, we're installing 46 years of install and service. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Attention Central Coast homeowners, is your water heater more than 10 years old? If so, upgrade to a heat pump water heater. Heat pump water heaters are 60% more energy efficient, saving thousands in energy costs. Plus, you'll help reduce carbon emissions. Best of all, you may qualify for up to a 50% rebate when replacing an old gas or propane water heater. Learn more at solarponics.com/waterheating. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Welcome back to Free Talk California. I'm Susanna Luthi, and we are speaking with Lance Christensen from California Policy Center. So Lance, recently when we talked, you were exploring a rerun, as state superintendent of schools, and you recently made an announcement that you will not be running for state office, and instead you have a new project. So let's talk about that. What kind of informed your decision not to run again?
Yeah, I appreciate it. In 2022, I ran statewide, and just when you run for an office that's, you know, trying to reach out to 22 million voters, you just realize how big the state is. I think I made an impact. I think I drove the conversation on academic excellence and parental rights and other important issues. I helped elect probably well over 400 or 500 local school board members between 2022 and 2024. But what I saw is that in as much as we were successful in moving the needle at the local level, and really California has a very strong local government structure, we kept getting undermined by the legislature, by the attorney general, by the governor, by the superintendent of public instruction, Tony Thurmond. And so as I was looking at the election results in November, I just realized I could go and spend the next 2 years trying to run for office statewide, or I could do my best and focus my efforts in managing an effort to hold the legislature responsible and possibly find people who really want to represent the families and businesses of California the way that we want to be represented in. And in doing that calculation, I just determined that running and doing something like that was just too much to handle. So I'm going to pass the torch on. I have a few people who are interested in running for the office, and I'm going to do what I can to determine who the best person is to carry that mantle on and then support them, and then work on electing people who really care about, you know, the things that you and I care about around the farm and the business table and the business and dinner table, and get those people elected.
I have to ask, because you and Lanny Chen, who ran for, was it state controller, both of you seem to have some wind at your backs, but it has to be tough in a state where Republicans just do not win statewide and are seen as huge underdogs, to get the kind of energy every day to campaign, because as you said, you have to reach 22 million people across the state. And obviously you deal with hostile media. And so what's it like? I mean, I'm just curious, like, how did you get up that energy every day to go around the state, and what's kind of the mentality you have to bring to that?
Well, I have five kids, and they're all seventh-generation Californians, and I don't want to leave. And so for me, running statewide was not an easy decision. It was a ton of sacrifice for my family. I was working full-time at the same time at California Policy Center and dividing, you know, my efforts as best as I could. But, you know, I was up at 6 in the morning and up to bed about 2 for about 9 months straight. And it was worth it because I built a lot of relationships, and I learned a lot about the process. But I also figured out a few better ways to do things better, or, you know, more intelligently. And so at California Policy Center, we developed a candidate academy and helped train people to run for office. We developed some other strategy academies and some really principles-based governance ideas that I think in this new project I can take, using that experience from 2022 and then this last election cycle in 2024, and be more effective. But I think that there's got to be people in the arena, and I decided that was going to be me in 2022, but it didn't need to be me in 2026, and I'm happy to support those that really care about liberty and life and family and the free market.
Have people seeking office been taking advantage of the candidate toolkit that you developed?
Oh, yeah. We had hundreds of people that took some portion of it, attended our seminars or events, and learn from us. And I had the real privilege of just counseling these people. California Policy Center is a nonprofit that doesn't engage in endorsing candidates, but we can help any candidate who shares the same goals to achieve those goals and teach them how to do it. Now that I'm moving over to the California Policy Partners, it's a different sort of venture. It's a membership-based organization.
So is this part of the center, or is it affiliate?
This will be distinct and separate. Yeah, okay. It's a separate nonprofit entirely, and I'll be running it to try to gain membership of people who really care about what happens in the state and want to elect better officials.
So tell us about the goals of the group and how you'll set about accomplishing them.
Yeah, so I think there's really five policy areas that most Californians care about right now, and it was some of that were reflected in the last election, but, you know, public safety is one. Energy and water is another big piece of it. Housing and infrastructure, the economy and taxes, and then education. And if we can find people who can be very disciplined and message on those issues and really define three or four key points, lowering cost of living, making sure our kids can actually read and write, and making sure that we're safe in our homes, business, and as we travel in our communities, I think we can have a California that's worth fighting for. And it's not a partisan issue. All these things transcend partisan labels. And so our goal is to find candidates amongst any party that can actually reflect these things and effectively push back against the progressive agenda that's been really killing California.
That's amazing. So where can people find you, and is 2026 going to be the first big election where you do a big push, or is it going to be a slow run? Are we going to see?
Yeah, we're going to go hard and heavy this next 6 months on really identifying key legislators that we want to focus on and help message for the public. We're going to develop out a whole overview and accountability system for all 120 members of the legislature, and then really get people involved in the process, but also build a farm team. So those local elected officials that really have a message and are effective in what they're doing at the school district level, city, county, water board, wherever, who think they would be a good fit for higher office, I'd encourage them to connect with me. They can find our information at californiapolicypartners.com, or they can just follow me on Twitter or X at Lance Lands, and I'm happy to connect with them and help direct those efforts. And those that are businesses, this is a nonprofit business association, and so if they want to join as a member, I'm happy to talk to them about how it can all work out.
Is this mostly directed at state office, or are you looking to recruit local officials as well?
At all levels, but mostly at state office, because that's where the critical policies are made. But we want to make sure we're building out a farm team at the local level too. So I'll have my eyes on a lot of people. And in fact, the last 4 years, I've built relationships in all 58 counties. And so I think there's ways that we can help people identify the right place for them to run for office. And if we have people that are really good in a particular district or area, we don't want to waste our time and resources. Maybe help them find good opportunities to serve in different capacities rather than competing with each other.
Right. Wow. Well, we're almost out of time now, but in the last few minutes, I do want to get, because it does relate to what you'll be doing with future officials. But this next year, in terms of legislation, what are your big hopes out of our Democratic supermajority? Do you see them kind of letting up on some of the gender ideology issues, on some of the taxes and the rollback of public safety, given what's happened in this last election?
Well, I think the Speaker of the Assembly realized he had a problem where legislators were just writing a lot of bills that didn't matter. He's cut back the number to 35 over 2 years. So maybe that will have some impact. I hope they'll focus on the science of reading and literacy, which is something that the State Board of Education has completely ruined. And that's why less than 40% of our kids across the state are at grade level in terms of literacy. I also think really hard about the business climate and driving people out of the state. Energy costs are always huge. Maybe they'll pull the gas pedal off of the climate change. The cost for AB 32 compliance is astronomical, and most people can't pay those costs. And I hope that we'll actually be serious about making sure that we're not building out a whole new slew of regulations that are, were modeled 100, 150, 200 years ago. Let's clean up the system and make it work for Californians across the state.
Well, yes. All good things. I have to say 2025 has started out on an optimistic note. I mean, Justin Trudeau resigned today, which he was clinging to power. Keir Starmer is being shamed publicly. Whether or not that leads to any serious reforms in the UK has yet to be seen. And Trump said that we should take over Canada. So I should actually directly quote him. I did find it. He said today that many people in Canada love being the 51st state, and the United States can no longer suffer the massive trade deficits and subsidies that Canada needs to stay afloat. And together, what a great nation it would be. So on that note, thank you so much for joining us, Lance, and good luck with your new venture. Would love to keep apprised of what's going on. And thanks to all of you for tuning in. We will talk to you next week. Take care.
Free Talk California is brought to you by A-Town Diner in Atascadero on El Camino Real. Now open for dinner every night. ask about the daily specials. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton. It's